Hello, everyone, and welcome to Milton Keynes Mental Health Hour with me, John Manning from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. Hope everyone is keeping as well as possible. And we're back with another Mental Health Hour discussing bereavement today. Over the last few months, there's been over 100 COVID deaths in Milton Keynes, not even counting the additional ones that are from other conditions or that would have happened anyway. So we really wanted to talk about bereavement today, talk about grief, and provide some practical things that you might be able to do going away from this show, but also for not just for yourself, but for other people as well. So we've got the wonderful Odette on, who we're going to be speaking to very shortly from the brilliant local charity Harry's Rainbow. And from anyone who doesn't listen to the show, it's just a safe space for us to talk about different topics related to our mental health. I'm John, and I'm the founder of a local organisation called Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. And we're a one-to-one support company. We also do group support services, organisational training, basically in order to help people improve their mental health, whether it's at work or just in the community. So we've been very, very busy lately. We're now also looking at supporting our NHS workers locally. So we've got a GoFundMe page, which is live. If you want to go and help us out there, just give us a Google. And like we said, today it's all about bereavement. So we want to help people to understand the different stages. We want to help people understand what they can do about it. And Odette, you've been working in bereavement for quite a while now. So welcome to the show. Really lovely to have you on. So where did it all start with you in bereavement? Anyone who doesn't know Harry's Rainbow, which are going to be quite difficult, I think. Everyone, I've not really never heard of Harry's Rainbow. It's really odd. It's such a big presence in Milton Keynes.
Hi, John. So I've been involved in bereavement since my own son died. Before that, I hadn't really experienced bereavement. So I've kind of catapulted into this arena of bereavement around about just over 11 years ago now. Shortly after Harry died, I realised there wasn't really much support out there for children specifically, particularly in our area of Milton Keynes. So that kind of set about a reaction for me to actually do something about it. So in 2011, Harry's Rainbow was born. And what we do is we support children who have been bereaved of a parent or sibling. So we've been doing that since 2011. And we do it in a number of ways. We facilitate groups. So we facilitate contact with bereaved children and families, basically, with rainbow groups and trips. We have a retreat, a caravan in Canvas Sands, where we send families on short breaks. And we provide information, resources and signposting, because that's really what I believe is crucially important for families who are very early on in their bereavement and just don't know where to turn.
It's amazing, and it's so incredible how you've been able to turn something so tragic into being able to help lots of people. And we've been doing some work together recently, and it's that the families are amazing. What they go through, and I think that's testament to the work that you guys do, the actual support that's out there, which is phenomenal. So on behalf of everyone in Milton Keynes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you do a blog as well, don't you?
Last year was Harry's 10-year anniversary, and as it was approaching, I'd always threatened to write a book because threatened myself. I weren't not threatened as such, but I kept promising myself. That's probably the better word. Yeah. Promising myself that I'd write a book based initially upon my experiences in the first year of losing my son. And that was going to come from a diary that I'd written. And don't get me wrong, I wasn't writing in this diary every day at all. But occasionally throughout the first year, I would write certain things that happened, sometimes poignant things, if I'd had a dream, or sometimes things that I found particularly tough. And I said to myself one day, I didn't threaten myself, I said to myself one day, I would write a book. And as I was approaching his 10-year anniversary, I realised that I hadn't succeeded at this plan of writing a book, because Harry's Rainbow had kept me really, really, really busy. So I decided perhaps a blog would be a better idea, so I could actually put short blogs out there as and when I wanted to talk about something in particular relating to being a bereaved parent. So I think I've probably written about 10 blogs in total, so probably not as many as I'd wanted to.
Okay.
But yes, it's called 10 Years Too Long, which is perhaps evident in its name, that it's 10 years too long that I'd lost my son. And yeah, it's from a parent's perspective of losing him, but I've had even people who are bereaved as a widow, become widowed, or in other circumstances of bereavement, have actually often said they identify with a lot of the things I say, because some of the fundamental things that can happen during grief and when you're grieving, which I believe is a constant, consistent thing, some of the things can be identified with, even regardless of who you've lost. Basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sharing that and sharing those experiences can be so helpful for people who might not necessarily recognize if they're in a particular stage, or do you even need to be in a particular stage. We said before we went on air that it's not linear, so we're going to be exploring the different types of grief, hopefully, or in the hope that people might be able to recognize it in themselves. And then we're going to be talking later on in the show what you can do about it, what's out there, and what other people can do to help as well. So we'll be right back to talk a little bit more about the different types of grief that people might experience.
The MK Mental Health Hour with 123 Internet Group.
MKFM.
Hello, welcome back. We're looking at bereavement today on the Milton Keynes Mental Health Hour on MKFM. It's John Manning here from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support, and we're very lucky to have the lovely Odette Mould here from Harry's Rainbow. And we're talking about bereavement. As we said before, there's been quite a lot of bereavement going on, especially more recently with the whole coronavirus outbreak. MK Citizen recorded that there's been just over 100 coronavirus deaths in Milton Keynes, but that's not counting all of the other ones from other conditions that have been going on as well. So Odette, with grief and with bereavement, people can understandably experience a variety of different things, and we've been talking about the different types of grief that people might be going through, and the different not so much the stages, but the different types of experiences they may have. So, but where does it kind of start when someone experiences a bereavement? Is there a starting point? Is there an end point? How what happens from your point of view?
I like to, and I'm talking from experience, but also of personal experience, but also experience of working with many bereaved children and families.
Yeah.
As well as research and particular and different types of models that have been published. So when you start grieving as soon as the person that you've lost dies, and you would tend to go into acute grief, which would involve all those typical emotions that I would imagine most people would understand that they would see in somebody, or perhaps you'd see in yourself, though I think it's harder to often understand your own emotions when you're grieving. So, you know, we're talking about shock, distress, sadness, crying, headaches, all those loss of wanting to, loss in your own interests, for example, and not wanting to eat, feeling angry, I could go on. Those symptoms, they are really normal. They're normal. You're going to feel like that because you've just lost somebody really very dear to you. And they're very normal feelings. What would happen beyond that? And I don't ever like to put a time span on it. Yeah. I don't believe grief is linear. The grieving process, should we say, is linear. I don't believe it's a one path. I don't believe it ends. But what happens is it becomes integrated into your life, and that's called integrated grief, basically. And it's where the grief is part of you and it's part of your daily life. So, but you can establish new interests. You can function.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying to explain it. Probably not doing it very well.
No, you do it really well.
I'm always concerned about saying accept, but you can accept the reality of the loss. You can accept that it's happened. And you're able to understand perhaps sometimes a bit more of your own feelings, perhaps wants and needs of even others around you and your own wants and needs as well. And almost resume your daily life activities, should we say.
Yeah. But it's still a stage of grief, though, so it's still there.
You
have the ability to carry on with life as best you can, really.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't necessarily even see it as a stage. I believe that's where I am. That me personally, yeah. The grief I feel is integrated into me and my life. And you can experience the acute grief symptoms as part of integrated grief. You can still feel those symptoms, the ones that were particularly strong at the start of the grieving process, and that can often happen at times you might not be you might not realize it's going to happen then, but there could be birthdays, big holidays, family gatherings, anniversaries, particularly the times where you would imagine things would be more tough. Anniversaries particularly, you can get signs and symptoms as they approach, and that's okay as well to feel all of those feelings. I think the time that you need to perhaps try and be more mindful of, and this is if it's yourself or somebody else that you know or you're close to, is if the grief can become complicated or prolonged. And that's where that can last for years. It's where those acute feelings are continuous and last for years, and you've not been able to integrate the grief into your daily life. So you might get huge feelings of guilt, yearning for the person that's died, where that acute grief doesn't seem to go away. Go on, John.
Like we said, that's completely normal from immediately after the event. And there's not necessarily a time scale of how long that should last, but very similar with mental health conditions or anything that does impact your mental health, the typical gauge on that is how much does it impact your day-to-day life. And if it's beginning to have an impact on work, people around you, like your family and how you're taking care of yourself, then that's really, that might be a little bit of a sign that it's moving from acute into that complicated, prolonged grief that people can experience, rather than it going down the integrated route.
I think it's very, very, very difficult. I really like this description and model regarding grief, but I still think it's very, very difficult to put people into.
You can't really categorize
time scales. And that, what's nice about this is there are no time scales, and it is almost an instinctive marker.
Yeah. And I think
you know somebody and you may think, I recognize some of this in you. And so what do I do about it for you? Or
absolutely. And it is
emotional intelligence. You might recognize it about yourself, but recognizing signs and symptoms on yourself can be really, really hard when you're grieving. And I imagine
absolutely
when you've got mental health
It can be, yeah, and it's really a case of having those people around you to recognise it up until the point where you can yourself. And like you said about the different life events like birthdays and holidays, you can learn that. You can develop that recognition inside yourself to do that when it's integrated. But I can imagine if it's acute or complicated, that can be more and more difficult because you're so overwhelmed by these different feelings. So we're going to have a look at what they might be, begin to have a look at what people can start to do about it if they do recognize anyone's in these particular areas. And as well, because some of the different bereavements that people might be talking about are going to be so fresh, if you are in acute, we're going to have a look at some things that you can do to give yourself the best chance of taking care of your well-being throughout this period of time. So we'll be back right after this to start looking at those things.
The MK Mental Health Hour with 123 Internet Group.
MKFM.
Hello, welcome back to the Milton Keynes Mental Health Hour with me, John Manning from Our Fair Lady's Mental Health Support, on MKFM with Odette Mould from Harry's Rainbow. So before the break, we were just talking about the different types of grief. So immediately people will start experiencing acute grief. It may move on to complicated grief where it's really starting to impact the life and the wider circle of friends or social circles that you might be in. How you're living your life, and then there's also integrated grief where the grief is still there, but you can carry on with life as normal as possible. So, Odette, we were talking in the break about the different stages that people might experience grief in, so the different feelings they might get or what they might be experiencing. And you've had some really interesting models that you've gone through before, so. What are the different stages of grief that that people might experience?
So I like to look at it as feelings that might be experienced and stages that might be experienced. Though people often refer to the Kubler-Ross model, if I pronounce that correct, stages of grief. But I think what has been recognised with that model, and that's where you will experience stages of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And it was often viewed that that was the order and they were the stages, and that it was a linear process. And actually, in more recent years, it's been recognised that this may not actually be accurate, or at least to understand that the stages are not linear or even guaranteed. And that was actually confirmed by Kubler-Ross, who developed the model towards the end of her career. And actually, just for some context, is that she developed this model as a result. It was based on a study of terminally ill patients that led to the acceptance of their own death. And so it was then used against people who were grieving. But actually, in more recent years, as I say, it's we know it's definitely not linear, and you may not experience those stages. So it's really, really important to not try to get yourself into a stage where you're trying to work out which stage you're at, why you're not feeling that, because that's certainly something that happened to me personally. Is I don't remember feeling that or that, and as we spoke earlier, it's really hard to actually even recognize what you're feeling, whether you've gone through that or not gone through it. So it's really important not to worry too much and get too hung up on that. I like what we were talking about previously, and I like the model, the Lois Tonking model of the circles model of grief, which is about how grief can be very much a whole part of you, and there's a circle, and that is all grief, and that's all encompassing. But as time goes on, the line, you draw a line around that circle, and that line eventually can become bigger and bigger. So it almost
opens up a bit of a fried egg. Opens up a bit of a free space around you, like an egg, like egg whites around a yolk.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that egg white space is you, like we were saying about integrated grief, it's you, your interests, what you do, your life, but the grief is very much still in there. And that circle around the grief will become bigger and bigger. And that really identifies with the integrated grief. But those stages, just to go back to all the thoughts and feelings that you'll have when you're grieving, You know, you will flick between feeling great and then feeling not so great. And so all the stages, you can flick between them. You can have up and down moments. And something that I like to talk about is the puddle jumping. And this is very much related to children, but it almost felt like that's what I was doing. I felt like I was grieving wrong, and I was grieving like a child when I heard this explanation. And it's about when you can't cope with the overwhelming feelings that are very normal in acute grief.
Yeah,
you children will puddle jump in and out. So they're jumping in a puddle, deal with those emotions, have those feelings, but actually can jump straight back out and might say, "What's for tea?" or "Can I go to the park?" And actually, sometimes I identified myself with that, where I felt like I'd jump in, deal and cope as much as possible. And then when I couldn't cope anymore, I'd almost jump out of that puddle and move on.
So
that's where I more recognise myself, and it's important because I've identified a lot with children.
And that's such a good way to put it, I think, because it's not linear. And obviously, even if it might seem like it's completely all-encompassing, or it might seem like it is completely consuming your life, that doesn't mean that you're not allowed to go and enjoy yourself out for dinner or something like that. It doesn't mean that you're still not in that acute period. It just means that you might be puddle jumping in and out of that grief, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I think that can be really helpful for friends to recognize as well, because
yes,
it might
definitely.
Be that, you know, for a couple of days you've puddle jumped out of it. It doesn't mean that grief is gone.
Absolutely. And that's what's really important to recognise in children and adults, that you might see somebody and you think they're okay now because they seem to be just getting on with life, as somebody might say it. But actually, it's important that they are still grieving. They are still experiencing some of those thoughts and feelings. They just might have jumped out of that puddle at that time, and you need to support them in that.
And I really, really like that egg model as well, because if the bereavements happen to an entire family, I can imagine that, well, everyone's got their individual egg, right? So it might be that if you crack an egg in a pan, it's going to be shaped differently. It's going to be some egg whites are going to be bigger than others or different shaped. So everyone's going to experience these different types of grief or stages of grief in a completely individual way. So it doesn't mean that an entire family goes through grief in exactly the same way. It's going to be very individual to the parents, to the children. So that's wonderful. Thank you very much for going through that.
Like, imagine a few eggs you've cracked into a pan at once.
Exactly.
They don't all work the same.
Exactly. Yeah. So after this, what we're going to have a look at is if you do recognize these different things, or if you can pick up on it with other people, how do we approach them? How do we have a conversation? What's going to be most helpful for us to do? So we're going to have a look at that when we come back right after this.
The MK Mental Health Hour with 123 Internet Group. MKFM.
Hello, welcome back to the Milton Keynes Mental Health Hour with me, John Manning from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. We're very lucky to have Odette Mould here from Harry's Rainbow on MKFM talking about bereavement this week. And bereavement is unfortunately something that we all will experience at some point in our lives. Quite a few people have experienced it more recently with everything that's going on. So we've talked about the different types of grief, the different stages that people might experience it. And what we wanted to cover today is some practical things about if you are in that very recent stage, or you're experiencing that acute grief that we were talking about, what can you do about it? So Odette, what have you found that is helpful for people at a starting point? Because it's going to be different for everybody. It's very normal to be experiencing that, but as well, what can people do that might help them out a little bit in that really difficult time?
So obviously, bearing in mind that what I've said already is that grief is a very, very individual and personal experience. So But what I feel, and sometimes when you're in acute grief and the feelings are all encompassing and you're overwhelmed, it can be quite hard to understand what you're going through, or but this might be what other people recognize in you. So this is really good for you if you are grieving, or other people who may be seeing family members grieving. Is I think it's really important that you're meeting your needs both emotionally and physically. So even if that's all you can focus on, or all you can look to recognize in others, is it's really important that the needs are being met, and that's really important. And you might meet your emotional needs by reaching out to somebody, by talking to somebody, and this can be, like I say, both whether you're the person grieving, whether you're a close friend and you recognize this. It's making sure the needs are met, emotional and physical. Now, I used to run, and when Harry died, I didn't want to run. I didn't want to do anything. Yeah. I did eventually find my running feet again. So it's important that if people do lose interest in certain physical needs, don't worry too much. But if there's any type of encouragement that you can give without forcing, I'm definitely an advocate in physical well-being, as well as emotional well-being. But it's very difficult to force that upon someone who just doesn't feel that they've got the energy. But any type of encouragement there, if you recognize it used to be something you enjoyed but you didn't think you wanted to, you would enjoy it, try it, because it's so important that you meet your needs. That's really really important.
And I think being kind with yourself about it as well, because we covered it in a protective factors show a few weeks ago, and protective factors are all these little things that we do that look after our well-being. And it could be physical, it could be, you know, running or any form of exercise that you get. It could be that, you know, you make sure that you're having regular contact with friends and family. But what you can recognize, if those do start dropping off, then it can be, even though it, you know, you want them to drop off, or you might not have any interest in doing those things anymore, even if it's speaking to other loved ones, it can be a very, very quick cycle into having more of an impact on you without those things in place. So emphasizing those can be really, really important.
Yeah, and it's important that you try to develop coping strategies. And I'm not saying that's something you need to do when you're immediately in acute grief. I mean, it's certainly not something I was thinking of. It wasn't even something that hit my radar. It's something I couldn't. But coping strategies are important to, if you're recognizing that there may be some negative coping strategies that you're reaching out to and you don't realize you're doing it, or other people might recognize in you, for example, substance abuse, alcohol, even things that are unhealthy for your body and your mind. Perhaps if you're not eating, and I know not eating is one of the signs in acute, but it's so important that you do try to eat something, obviously. Actually, that brings one thing that I always felt really helpful, and when I was going through this myself, I had numerous friends would drop meals off at my doorstep. And I know that's very much a big thing at the moment anyway, because of COVID, and people are recognising that that's a need for people, which is really lovely about the community spirit that's come out. But that's something that's really, really, really practical and really important, is that if you know somebody is grieving, send them a meal, because that could be the meal, the only meal they eat that day, and that saved them from having to find that energy to cook. So it's just meeting one of those needs.
And I was going to say, it might not even necessarily be an appetite thing. It might just be sheerly the energy of cooking something nutritious, washing up, all of those different things that go into it. It might not be an appetite. It could just be energy. So that's really helpful. And we wanted to talk about, you know, obviously in that very acute stage, people might not recognize how they feel or be able to articulate how they feel. It might just be such a swirl of emotions that they don't really know how to talk about it. So it's really important that if we do have a friend or a family member that might have gone through some sort of bereavement, that we can also pick up on things, because we were talking about it in the break that having that conversation with them is difficult. And I know from, not necessarily related to bereavement, but I know that sometimes you can put conversations off with people if it's a difficult conversation or you don't know how to approach it. Is that something that happens with friends and with yeah, bereavements?
Absolutely. I think people can, one of the common things is people avoid talking to you. Or you might recognise yourself as somebody who will avoid talking to the person who's bereaved. You don't know whether to talk about the person. You don't know what to say. But they do want you, predominantly most people who are grieving do want you to talk to them. Or even to ask them what happened. Recognise and accept their story. And even offering information that you may have, for example, regarding local organisations such as Harry Rainbow, for example, who may be able to help and support your family, not necessarily right now, but at some point in the future. And that's really important because that saves that person having to go and find that information themselves, which is where I found myself. So providing information, not worrying too much about, is it the right time? Is it not? I truly believe in giving people information as soon as bereavement has happened, because they may be the type of person that wants to go and find out what they can do about it straight away. We're all individual, like I said, and I was that person. I wanted to know what I could do about it. That's just my personality. Other people don't want to, but actually if they've got that information, they've got it sitting there waiting in a drawer in the kitchen, and they might go back to it in a few weeks' time.
Absolutely.
I find that people promise themselves, I will let them know this in a few weeks when they are ready. But actually, that tends to drop off and you might forget to give them that information. And then they then don't end up with the information that could be really crucial, because at some point during their grief, they might recognise that they want to seek support for their emotional well-being beyond their usual family and friend circle. And that support might come in the form of support groups, other people that know how they feel, or even they might recognise that they actually want to talk to somebody more specifically, for example, within your organisation, Arthur Ellis, and knowing that they've got information to hand will really help them
take that step. Yeah, like you said, it's better to have 20 leaflets on the side that you don't look at for 3 months, but they're there when you need them.
Exactly.
And I think that looking at protective factors as well, and if it is a friend or family member that has been bereaved and we're wondering whether to reach out to them or talk to them, one of the biggest protective factors you can have is, you know, connecting with other people, friends, family, that social element of your life. And if friends are, you know, thinking, oh, I might not talk to them because they might not want to talk about it right now, or I don't really know what to say to them, that there's a real risk there of that person becoming isolated on top of everything else.
Absolutely.
And no doubt they'll probably want to isolate themselves at that moment in time. But friends, you know, by having those conversations and by talking about it, we did say earlier that just by asking the question about, you know, how are they in addressing that bereavement, it's not going to be that, you know, it's not going to be more difficult than what they've already experienced. So asking that conversation isn't going to be difficult for the bereaved.
It is. It's acknowledging the person that's died as well. Expressing condolences and sympathy is most definitely something that you can do. Check in on the person. Don't wait for them to ask. Just don't wait for them to ask, please, if there's one thing you're going to do, because they probably will not ask you. And, you know, if you have to ask them 10 times during a year to join you, to go out, still keep asking them if they've said no 10 times, because that 11th time, they might be ready to join you. They might just be ready to join you.
So absolutely.
It's about consistent support to people, which can be really hard for others to keep up with, but it's so important.
Absolutely. Everyone's egg is different.
Yeah, Exactly.
Right. Okay, so we're going to have a little bit of a roundup of all of those, and also some point you in the direction if you do want to access a bit of an additional support right after this.
The MK Mental Health Hour with 123 Internet Group. MKFM.
Welcome back to the Milton Keynes Mental Health Hour. This week we're talking about bereavement. So it's John here from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support, and we're here with Odette from Harry's Rainbow, local bereavement organisation for children. And we've had a really good show addressing some really, really important issues that everybody will experience throughout their lives. But more so recently in relation to the coronavirus. There's been over 100 deaths locally, not counting the ones from different conditions not related to the coronavirus. So we've talked about the different stages of grief, being acute, complicated grief, and then integrated grief once it develops more from just a yolk into having that egg white around you, where you can start engaging in other activities within your life and managing your life alongside the grief. And then we started talking about if that is a very recent or acute grief, the things that people can start to focus on. So being really kind to yourself about it's completely normal to experience these things or feel these things, but try your best to make sure that you've got positive coping strategies going on. So if you do typically run, as Odette, you do, maybe switch it to walking for the time being, just so you are still getting some physical activity. Your needs physically and emotionally are still being met, but just be really kind to yourself. Friends out there, if it's a friend or a family member that's been bereaved, have the conversation with them. Talk to them more often than you think you should need to. And if you are worried about having a conversation, it's not going to be worse than what they've already experienced. So just ask the question, address the bereavement, and make sure that you're socializing with that person so that they don't become isolated. So what we also pointed out, and Odette, you mentioned about information and just having information there. It might not be relevant right now, but it could become relevant in the future. So what sort of information can people pick up? Where can they find out more about Harry's Rainbow? And what's out there for people who might be bereaved at the minute?
Okay, so firstly, Harry's Rainbow support children bereaved of a parent or sibling, and we are still very much open and supporting. We've amended and adjusted our support services in line with the COVID pandemic. So firstly, you can go to our website, www.harrysrainbow.co.uk, and that is if you have a child who has been bereaved of a parent or sibling and live in the Milton Keynes or surrounding areas. If you have a child or you know somebody who has a child who is bereaved of any family member or any person or who has died, and you feel that you need some emotional support, Child Bereavement UK have a helpline that can help you. They are open 8 to 8, and the number is 0800 02 88840, but they've also got a website, which is Child Bereavement UK. And they have some amazing, amazing resources on there as well, from everything from how do you tell a child that somebody's died, going to die, funerals, what children understand at different ages. Such great resources on there. And if you're struggling to find them, you know, get in touch with me at Harry's Rainbow and I'll point you in the direction of specific things if that's what you want. I've not got a problem with that at all. And also there is a national bereavement support helpline, a specific COVID one. And it's out there now. And that's also open 8 to 8 every day. And the number is 0800 2600 400. And the lines are manned by NHS nurses and supporters. So, and I don't think you have to be absolutely bereaved of somebody who perhaps died from COVID. It's bereavement during this whole period of time, and those people are there to help you. So if you don't know anywhere to go to first, go there. And just one more, sorry, John, I'm reeling for you.
That's absolutely fine. This is so important.
It's the Good Grief Trust. So they're really hoping at the moment to centralise early signposting for bereaved people, and they are pushing to have a special card given to every person at this moment who is bereaved, which contains a helpline number and can signpost to lots of other organisations across the whole country. Yes. So it might be that somebody listens to this and they're not in Milton Keynes and they don't know actually, you know, is there something like Harry's Rainbow, for example, elsewhere? And the Good Grief Trust hold details for a lot of other organisations who you may be able to be signposted to. So that's a good place to go as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Odette. And if anyone does relate to anything within this show or want to talk to the lovely people over at Harry's Rainbow, you can search for them. If anyone wants to talk to Arthur Ellis, we are open as well. And we've switched all of our services over, so you can head over to www.arthurellismhs.com to find out more about what we do and what we might be able to support with. So thank you so much, Odette. Thank you for Harry's Rainbow as well. I really appreciate you being on the show, being so open about your own experiences as well. So thank you for sharing with everybody.
You're very welcome. Thank you for asking me to join.
No worries. Take care of yourselves, and no doubt I'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, John.
All right. See you later.
The MK Mental Health Hour and MKFM.